Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Daigle Bites ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Daigle Bites.
Where are you now when darkness seems to win? Where are you now when the world is crumbling? Oh,
and welcome again to a very special episode of Daigle Bites. We're here celebrating the 2-year anniversary of Look Up Child, and I thought who better to help me talk through how insane this journey has been than with someone who has been with me through it all. So for the first time ever, we have a special guest on the Daigle Bites podcast. Everybody give it up for Lee Holt. Yes! And if you want to know who Lee Holt is, she is my manager. She's my manager, my friend, my confidant, all the secrets that no one else will know.
Until now.
But only Lee. Okay, so how Daigle Bites is going to go today, Lee has a special surprise for me that I do not know about.
You nervous?
Maybe just a little bit. And she's going to ask me a bunch of questions. So, Lee, go ahead and kick it off.
Okay, so what we're going to do today, I've got some questions for you.
All right.
But I created this, and we as a team have been talking about what the 2-year anniversary of Look Up Child means and the significance of the record, and the record, you and the record have won 13 major awards in the last 2 years.
I didn't know that.
I know, is that insane?
Wow. Wait, which ones?
Just think. I have a list of the awards. American Music Awards, Dove Awards, K-Love Awards, Grammy Awards, Billboard Awards.
Holy moly.
I know, when you see it like that.
Yeah, that's shocking.
Yeah.
Off of one record, that's insane.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Wow.
And this is after you had won about 17 awards for How Can It Be.
Wow. So, well, good job, Look Up Child, you're slacking.
Get better.
I'm kidding.
That doesn't count this year. It's worse that all the shows have been canceled.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
But anyway, it's insane. So what we've done to kind of go back was we built a timeline of the record.
All right.
Which I think will surprise most people that it started in October of 2015. And that's when you wrote You Say. And a lot of people have heard the story about how and when you wrote You Say. After an award show, and then you came over to my house and you played it for us at the house, and I remember crying immediately. It was the only time I cried in the last 5 years.
You don't like my music. You never cry. Yeah. My music doesn't work on you.
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding.
Well, then if we go on to February of 2016, so you're out on the Winter Jam Tour, mm-hmm. and we're in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I remember you telling me a story that you had a vision for the record in Knoxville.
I remember this.
So can you tell everybody about what you saw in Knoxville?
Yes. What I actually saw with my own two eyes was cinderblock peach walls in the bottom level of the arena where it was a gym, basically. And we were in one of the locker rooms as our dressing room. For everybody who thinks that, like, touring is this ultimate glamorous life and all the things, there are moments. But typically on a day in and day out basis, you're looking at, like, gym floors, a lot of, what are those showers called? Like the group shower, team shower.
Gang showers.
Gang shower, like the team shower heads, yeah. Like where it's like 10 showers in one room.
One room, bunch of heads.
Yeah, it's like, oh gosh. But it's a lot of fun. And you really learn to appreciate what hot water is because it's not in every venue. That's for daggum sure. So I'm in this locker room and I remember saying, like, the label wants me to have a vision for this record. I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea what the vision is. But God, like, I need you to help me. I need you to give me some clarity on this. And I said, I'm going to get alone for a second. And I walked into the area where people would hang their jerseys or whatever after they'd, you know, done a game or something. And it was all cinder block walls and wood lockers. And I just sat in there and prayed and probably read for a little bit. And I remember knowing that the record was going to be about identity. Wasn't it in that room?
Yeah.
And that was all I got. So I was like, thanks for the deep explanation, God. But I also had this feeling that it was going to take me through a journey of finding out my identity in this process. Because a lot of times you can write a song or deliver a message, but people can feel when you haven't experienced it for yourself. And so I think for this record, a lot of what was written, a lot of it was something that I had experienced, and then a lot of it was what I was going to experience in the process of releasing the record. So I think when I heard the word identity, it was like a little bit of my stomach twisted, because I was like, I think I'm about to walk through some of the hardest years of my life. But it's been some really fruitful and beautiful years as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we all have, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
The identity, even recent events, being in a quarantine situation. And then for me personally, being at home all of a sudden without, not from going from being on the road so often to being at home, and all of a sudden be like, what's my identity here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I've thought about that song so many times in the last couple of months specifically, to be like, this song was written 5 years ago and it still can tear me apart.
Yeah.
You know, and just be like, no, who I am, replacing the lies with the truth.
Yeah.
You know, it is kind of, I think that's why it's timeless.
Yeah. And I was telling Lee the other day, I was saying, you know, I don't know what to do with myself when I'm not functioning on the road or when I'm not in the studio writing a song. Like the day-to-day things, like, hey, brush your teeth. Hey, brush your hair. Hey, take a shower. Hey, walk out the door. Hey, make sure you have clothes on when you walk out the door.
Please.
It's like, put your pants on. It's like all of these things that everyone else does. And it's so funny. This is so odd. But like, even it took me back to like middle school and high school when I was like a kid, like just going through the normal rhythms, like waking up, eating breakfast. I was like, Dad, wake me up as late as possible. I was like the one that was like running out the door.
Yeah, that hasn't changed.
Yeah, that has not. That will never change. I've had to deal with it. It is what it is. I wish I could change it, but it's not going to change.
Yeah.
It is who I am. But I was like, I remember it brought all these flashbacks of like what routine looked like. Like, hey, you're not rolling up out of the venue or out of the bus going into the venue to like get in a community shower basically and brush your teeth in a spigot of water that's like dripping.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Hopefully you can get some water out of that and brush your teeth with it. Or brushing your teeth with water bottles, whatever.
Right.
It was just interesting. Like, wow, I haven't been in this routine in this way of life in so long.
Yeah.
And it just makes you like reflect upon change. And, you know, when I think about that record and what all it has brought, it's been like the greatest highs and some crazy lows, and it's been massive wins and massive, like, I don't want to say failures, but I just want to say like
losses.
Learning. Yeah.
Losses.
Yeah. Loss. Yeah. Like, it's so interesting. But I think that's what makes the soil of it all so rich, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was February of 2016. And then in September, and again, we were in the middle of, I think your radio single at that time was Trust in You, you know, which is crazy to think. Like, that was the big thing. And Winter Jam was a big deal. That was a launching pad for your career.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go to September of 2016. That was your first headline tour, A Night with Lauren Daigle. And that's
16 shows?
Yeah. 12 shows.
12 shows.
Sold out. All sold out shows.
You did it, girl. 12 shows. Nailed it. And this one was like 72.
Yeah.
When I say change, what I mean is... No, I'm kidding.
So that's when you first started singing You Say live, which again, a lot of listeners don't know that song actually has had a life before even Look Up Child came out. And then let's go to maybe one of the hardest moments for a manager.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about it, Lee.
Christmas Day of 2016 when you sent a text.
Oh, well, I didn't even have the audacity to give you a phone call.
No, it was,
hey, I'm going to drop a
Christmas.
Bomb, but it's going to be through a text.
Merry Christmas.
Welcome to the millennial generation. Gross.
What did that text say?
That text, how funny is this? This is great that you have a full printed out. For all the listeners, there is a full printed out documentation timeline of everything, of all of these events that she's mentioning. I want to take a year off. That was what I texted you. Like, hey,
Merry Christmas.
I've been learning about the harvest as I'm sitting out here hiding from my family because I'm about to lose my mind. It was literally, I remember it so clear. We had just gotten off of tour. I was fried. I was so exhausted. And that was the first tour that I was like really depleted. Like I could tell, like that was the one that I was getting sick, mm-hmm. all of that on.
Well, it was 19 shows in 21 days.
Yeah.
Across the country, from Tampa to San Diego or something like that.
Yeah. Crazy. New York, all the way up to New York.
Yeah.
Chicago.
Tampa, New York, Chicago, San Diego, then back to Phoenix.
Golly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about rough. But it was, I mean, it was great. But I remember it was great in the sense of like truly what I looked forward to every single day was mm-hmm. the show.
Yeah.
Like it really was the lifeline. But I remember being so sick. I wouldn't wake up until like 20 minutes before I had to be on stage, like from the day before. Just, oh, it was awful.
Oh, I have some pictures. I have a great picture of you in the back lounge of the bus one day when it was like 4 p.m. Literally.
Gosh.
Sleeping, dead asleep. Like it was when, I think it was one of the buses where it came out.
Yes, I had the bed.
The bed in the back. And
yeah,
I mean, it literally was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
That was the first time I had to like go get IVs, like for medical reasons, not for like hydration, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa, this is really taking a toll on me. Yeah. And I mean, that shows, that does show what passion does too, because I really loved getting to play those shows every night.
Yeah.
Like I remember being so excited, but also knowing like, okay, something's not right. Like with my health, something's off. So I've got to take a break. And it was really just going back to that December 25th, that text message. It was really God saying like, but another thing is to honor your body. This is a temple, you know? So don't make yourself, don't kill yourself over these joys. Like, let them remain joys. Because if you keep wearing yourself out and driving yourself into the ground, then this will get taken away. That's just how life works. And so I remember thinking, I had just left that tour. I was so exhausted. I think we got in on like the 22nd or the 23rd.
Yeah, it was. Like, the last show was the 21st and you stayed in Phoenix for a couple of days and then flew home.
I flew home
on the 23rd.
Yeah. And so I was just done. And we're the family that hosts all the families for Christmas. So all of our in-law, everyone comes over on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day, it's like 50 people show up at our house, like huge. And here I am like wiped, have nothing in me. And I'm like, God, you know, if I go out of this room, I'm going to just be hiding in closets all day, like trying to just avoid as many people as possible, which is the total opposite of me. Like I'm the person that like, when I haven't seen my cousin in 4 years, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I can't wait to see you, you know? So I knew something was up. And so I said, God, I need to spend some time with you. So that's when I was reading all about the harvest. And there's this passage in Psalm, I think it was Psalms, and it said, while you sleep, I will provide. Mm. And I said, God, like what year of the harvest would I be in if like we started from the very beginning of me doing music, like the first kind of thing. First thing was like American Idol. Okay, so starting back in American Idol, what year am I in? And I remember I was going into the seventh year.
Yep.
Wasn't that right?
Yeah.
Or I'd done 7 years or something like that.
It was like the beginning of your seventh year. So
yeah.
It was the time for the rest.
Yeah. So according to the harvest, I think it's like 6 years of like
toil,
like, mm-hmm. you know, laboring over the harvest, putting richness into the soil, and then you gather your harvest and then you let the soil rest for a year.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to be like soil and I'm going to rest for a year. And so I texted you. I remember I said, like, I think I'm into rest. I need to take a year off. And you were so supportive and just super gracious. Yeah. Cue the panic that did not spill out onto me, which was awesome.
Well, do you remember what the vision that I saw when you, so
yeah,
I was
slingshot.
At home. It was Christmas Day. My kids were, gosh, you know, 5 and 7 maybe at that time. I can't remember. Some younger. And
yeah.
It was the great part of Christmas Day where moms get to rest and dads get to build Legos. And so,
perfect.
So, yeah, it was perfect. So I'm laying on the couch reading. I was reading The Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes, of all things. Like, this book that is like, say yes to everything. And I get, because I got it.
Lauren's going to say no for you.
Yeah, as a Christmas gift. I'm reading that. And after she sent me that text and we texted back and forth. And I did. It was the panic moment for me as the marketer is like, we're at the height. Like, and the success that we were experiencing at that moment was kind of not at all normal for any new artist.
Mm-hmm.
So working with so many new artists in my career, like, to be like, wait, no, this is where you pour gas on the fire. This isn't where you like put out the fire.
Yeah.
So every inclination in my being was like, no, we have to like push the gas. But after I thought about it and prayed about it, I remember feeling like that whole idea of a slingshot where it's like, okay, wait a minute. If we take this year off, if we honor the commitments that we have that we can't get out of, but not add commitments to the calendar. So we did honor the commitments that were already on the calendar that day. And we only added a couple of things that were like massive, like doing Reba with ACMs, doing the Blade Runner song. Like you had said a couple weeks later, like the only opportunities that I would want to say yes to are like kind of life-changing opportunities, or like 400 million people kind of opportunities, like not like 40 people opportunities.
Yeah.
So we had a kind of a guiding force for the year. But I remember the vision that I was given was that of a slingshot.
Yeah.
That if we take a year off, we're just going to be pulling back. And the minute it goes, like once we start, and so to be here 2 years later with this record.
Yeah.
And to see God's faithfulness in that.
I'd be begging for 40 people in a room. I'm kidding.
I've got goosebumps even thinking about that. Like God, like really showing up and doing exactly that.
Yeah.
And at a time when, and I remember going back to work and the teams being like, y'all are crazy. You know, like what you're doing, you are not going to be successful. Like you didn't see as much of it that we felt, but we got so much pushback.
Yeah.
And ultimately the teams that we still have are also supportive and they understand. I think now a couple years later, they understand when we come to them and say, hey, this is what we really feel like the Lord's done, or this is what we really feel like we're being called to do. They're like, okay, we get it. It makes us sweat, but we got it.
It makes me sweat. Golly.
Yeah. I'm a little stressed talking about it.
I am so glad that it turned out the way that it did, though.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Everything was just, all I needed was just a trip to Tulum. That was it. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I got to stay home and be with family.
Yeah.
So good. Makeup. I thought so much about that saying, making up for lost time.
Yep.
And I used to be like, you can't really make up for lost time because the time is gone. But I really do think that there is a way that God positions time where he can allow the present to absorb the years that feel like they've been lost. It's not that they've actually been lost. It's that, you know, people have gone different directions or whatever. And then there's that come together time when people get to come together. And that's what that year was. It was like, okay, I've been off touring for the past, you know, 4 years or whatever. And it was like a time to come together and, you know, water the soil of relationships, friendships, family, whatever. And it wasn't necessarily making up for lost time, but as much as it was expanding present time.
Yeah.
And so that allowed me to just like pour back into myself and then get back out there and do it again, you know?
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's so good. So if we keep going on the timeline, for those of you who don't have it in front of you, in June of 2017, that's when you wrote Rescue.
Yes.
Which is kind of insane, again, how long the life of that song is.
I know.
And then we're going to skip the rest of 2017 because you were off doing nothing.
You were off looking at the swamps in Louisiana.
In January, you started writing. So when you started writing at that time, when you started writing in January, was your hope to cross over the album? Like, what were your thoughts as it related to, like, crossing over?
Yeah. I remember we kept saying that phrase, let's extend the tent pegs. Like, let's try to make this record as wide and available for as many people as possible.
Yep.
Just to find truth and have hope and learn about Jesus, you know? Yep. And so I think there was some intentionality with it as far as the approach was not to eliminate people groups.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to change the lingo or I'm going to change things that I care about as far as, like, you know, God was still very present in this record. Right. And, like, I remember one of the guys that we wrote with, Paul Duncan, praying at the end of one of the sessions. And then out of that, this girl came.
Yeah.
Like, so it was really interesting because there was a lot of very personal moments that happened on this record that were different from How Can It Be.
Yep.
And How Can It Be was wonderful, but I think How Can It Be was me, like, literally sitting at a computer and being like, so what is this? How do you record? Like, what?
Yeah.
Just having so green, having no perspective.
Yeah.
And Look Up Child was like, a little bit, it was just slightly more personal, I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's awesome. And on that note, we're going to kick it to one of your Q&A questions from Greenville, South Carolina. And the question was, how long did it take you to create the album Look Up Child?
I want to know a secret. We had a rush order on that situation. From the time of writing the record and recording not only my vocals, but like every single amount of instrumentation, and then going into the producing was only 5 months. Now, the standard is about a year, sometimes 2 years. So you can see how expedited, how much faster we had to work because Lauren likes to take time off. If I'm going to tour like this, when I'm done touring, I'm like, okay, I don't need to darken the doorway until at least 6 months. I'm just going to go in my little cocoon and hide out and paint or play in the mud because I'm from the swamp. And so after that, we had a deadline to meet and we had to get it done in 5 months. It was fun. A lot of hours. I think I slept maybe 2 hours of the 5 months, but it was great.
I wish I could say, like, oh, we sat in the jungle in Bali in our bungalow and wrote for 9 months straight. And then we had a year to record and blah, blah, blah. What ended up happening is we had a mishap for one of the deadlines. So welcome to the real world, everybody. Like, this is what making a record looks like. Everybody's like, oh, it's glorious and simple. And it is. It is awesome because you get to tuck away and just stay in a creative space. And that's beautiful in of itself, you know. But there's also, like, external challenges that you face in the process. And one of those was just a miscommunication that was, it literally changed and derailed the entire record making process.
Yeah, like, I left that off the timeline.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's not on the timeline. And there's no blame or anything like that. It literally just, but I think it was for the better because what it did was put us under a pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. And we wrote, recorded, and produced, completed, whatever, the entire record within 5 months. And you better believe we were white knuckling. Like, oh my gosh, white knuckling.
So many stories. I'm like, gosh. I have so many things I could share. Right,
I
now.
Know. It is insane. Like that
late
process.
Nights. Long nights. Yeah. All nights.
Like, I would start singing my vocals at midnight, sing till about 4 or 5 in the morning, sleep for a few hours, and wake up and be back in the studio for 11 a.m.
No, that's not true. You would wake up and go promote the record and then be back in the studio about 4 p.m. after you had a day full of like
promotion.
I have to go sell this record.
Golly.
So
there was a lot of that too. Yeah. And like, we're going to take a couple of trips in the middle of it and just wait. And yes, your voice is going to be fried, but you're going to get back in there. You're going to do it. It's going to be fine. It was, oh gosh, it was so stretching. Those are the kind of things. It's like with the identity, like it is, you do find out what you're made of in the midst of those kind of moments. So I'm not angry whatsoever about having to do it that way. I actually think it brought out some gold that we might not have experienced otherwise, you know?
I don't know that the record would have ever gotten finished.
So next record, let's do it in 3 months. Perfect. We'll beat the previous timeline.
Side note, and this wasn't on the timeline, but I was the day that you turned in the record, which that is on the timeline, June 29th, I was in California on vacation with my family. And Lauren and Paul were swimming at his house.
Oh, I remember that. Like, it was yesterday.
I think I texted probably 4 to 6 times, solidly. No response. Called probably 4 to 6 times, no response. And I'm thinking, I'm just so ready to be on vacation. And I called and finally got you on the phone. And I said, Lauren, like, you have to upload the record like right now or we will miss every day. Like, the record will not come out on September 7th. And you're like, oh yeah, Paul's going to get it. I was like, no. It has to be uploaded right now.
Right
We've
now.
Probably
like
actually 5, already 5 missed it. It had to be 5 p.m. Central Time. And it's already like 2:57 Pacific Time. I was in California. I remember, I know exactly where I was in the car driving. We were in La Jolla or La Jolla, however you say it. We were there. I know what the palm tree looks like. When I was like, we did all this work. Like, we've just broken every barrier to make this happen. And they're not going to upload the record.
I remember standing at the edge of the pool and saying, Paul, you have to get out of the pool. Paul. Like, I need, no, they're calling me. They're saying, like, right now. Like, no, like, right now. Like, I remember being like, no, get out of the pool! Now! Like, freaking out. And he was like, no, I think I did it. And I was like, I don't know what's happening because I can't even, like, press the space bar correctly, you know?
It was the kindness. There's a lot of kindnesses with so many people with this record because... with the hope of it being excellent, like Paul and Jason and Lauren, like spent every minute they could to make it a masterpiece. But we had a lot of kindnesses by all the label people. Like the reason why we had to get that record in was like not the mix guy, but one of the guys in the process to upload it to Spotify, Apple, iTunes. He was like staying late because he was leaving on vacation.
This.
And like so then we were like inconveniencing a guy who we've already completely inconvenienced.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But there's so many people that nobody ever sees.
Yeah.
The behind the scenes layers upon layers upon layers upon layers of people who are like typing in all the information for the grace notes. So like when you put your CD in, like it says the name, like those people are like standing by to get the masters of the album. And like you would never even know.
I remember there was a day where you asked me, well, Lauren, when someone goes to put the record in their car, do you want it to say, look up child? Because it will not say, look up child on the screen if you do not turn this in.
I did not raise my voice.
You're just like, you did not raise your voice, but you're like, Lauren, I'm going to kill you.
I'm
going to
die.
So many things. Meanwhile, I'm like, at the frothy monkey, like, well, I'm just grabbing a latte really quick. I'm kidding. Oh, gosh. So much learning experiences.
Okay, so.
We all start from somewhere, guys.
Yeah. So on March 30th is when you sent over the piano vocals of the whole record. I remember listening. I think it was Easter weekend. I remember listening to it on an airplane on the way to Chicago. Again, in this like condensed timeline, in April, we recorded the strings, the background vocals, the horns, the keys,
so fun.
And the BGVs. And this is a question from Shannon C. And it is about the BGVs on the album. Who and how many people sang the BGVs on the record?
Okay, this is incredible. So first of all, recording this process was so much fun. Like, genuinely just... it was a thrill getting to hear those strings, getting to hear everything go down. What might marvel everyone is that there were two BGV singers. Me, hello, spoiler alert, and Morgan Harper Nichols. Now, a lot of you may know who Morgan Harper Nichols is because of her Instagram. She has an incredible Instagram where she does a bunch of art and sayings.
Yeah, she's so encouraging.
And yeah, it's super encouraging. And I think she like works with anthropology and different like outlets like cool. that, like just doing random art. It's really cool. She's amazing. So she sang majority of the background vocals, and she had this idea. She says how she approaches the microphone, she just personifies a different person. So in her mind, she's like, today I'm Gina, or today I'm Victor, or today I'm, you know, whoever. And she just like gets that character in her mind, like locked and loaded. And she sings as they would sing, which allows her voice to take on so many mm-hmm. eclectic and wild shapes. Like, and that's why it sounds like there's a massive choir behind me, but it's actually just one person. It's her.
Yeah.
And then my overdubs or whatever. Yeah. So
it was crazy, crazy live. You know, we travel with three singers. We've done it with four. We've mm-hmm. you've had six on the Dove Awards a couple of years ago. It's mm-hmm. like, so to replicate Morgan's sound,
I know
we're paying multiple people yeah. to come on the road with us.
Yeah. She is such a talent.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. I mean, her art is taking off too, which is yeah. awesome. Her voice is one of my favorite voices.
Yeah.
Definitely meant to be celebrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a very good question.
That was a good question.
Okay. So, and then in May, as I mentioned, you were promoting the record while you're still making the record. How did that make you feel to sit in the room with executives and play demos for them?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's just talk about the music industry for a second to everybody who doesn't live in this space. I would never know this, but in order, basically how it works is you go and you present your record to like Apple or Spotify or Pandora, Amazon. And did I miss any? We gotta play fair. Okay. But there's all these outlets that you go and you present your record to. And typically it's after the record is completely finalized, like finished, done, over and out. But our timeline was so jacked up that our promotion slots, like where you go and speak to these companies, it was in the middle of our record making process, which I don't know anyone that has ever happened to. Like that is so not, yeah. that is not the norm, because you want to present the best quality of work. You want to present it like finalized, finished, wrapped in a bow, looking beautiful. And you present that to them to give kind of the overall scope of what it's yeah. going to be like. And so these were like not the roughest, like it wasn't just piano vocal, but it was very early in the yeah. stages of recording.
Not mixed.
Yeah, not mixed. Super early in production and all of that. And so
then we only had like three songs that we could play in the first meeting, then four songs in the second meeting. Like it was yeah. like this gradual like amount. And usually in these meetings, you will have the whole record and you can present the whole record. And
yeah.
it's like, yeah, so it was, I think you had a little bit of anxiety.
Oh, yeah, no pressure. Like Steve Jobs' right-hand man is just sitting yeah. there asking you, like, so tell me about this song, and you only have three to show for it.
Yeah.
You're like, please, trust my record. Yeah. It's going to be something, yeah. I promise. You know, but it was actually really humbling, and it was really beautiful because I feel like God always takes those moments where you're like, I've got to get all the T's crossed and the I's dotted, and he makes them human. Yeah. And what I saw in those environments were people who were really open and versatile.
Yeah.
And it broke down walls that yeah. felt like, oh, if I didn't do this, then I was going to fail.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like a lot of them were like, wow, this is taking a level of boldness
yeah.
to be able to give over a product that
it's not finished.
Isn't finished yet.
It made like, you more human to them.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, exactly. It yeah. just made it more real. Like, hey, I'm just a girl from Louisiana just trying to share some music with y'all. And it was just really personal. Like the entire process was very personal. So I actually wouldn't go back and do it differently.
Yeah.
In the moment.
There's a couple things I mean.
In the moment, I'm like.
There's a couple moments I'd like to get back. Yeah. But that's okay.
In the moment, I was kind of like, well, I don't think that we're doing this yeah. the right way. But looking back, I'm like, wow, I'll probably never get that experience again.
No, like, I'm not going to make those same mistakes.
I'm like, oh, I kind of love that it happened that way because it will probably only happen that one time, you know? Yeah. I love it.
And if you think about it, you say the intro to you say was different until the 11th hour. It was the way the demo, remember the demo version of you say had a different keys intro. Yeah. And Paul changed it at like the 11th hour, like within a week, within 10 days probably of us turning the records. So you think all those people in the room heard a different version of you say, which is not as powerful. It's so weird that that key change that he made.
Yeah. All he did was
change the song.
Yeah. He just brought the keys down.
Yeah. And
to a different register.
To think like they all heard the song different than the song that it is.
And, yes.
You know, it's wild.
I know. That. And that really did, like that change just really solidified that song in such a different way. But even to know like those people came around the record listening to it so early on in the phases of it all, that was really special.
Yep.
And then, you know, having it get done. Golly, I remember us changing the BPM.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
We were literally like,
that
for
was
people
for the
who don't know.
Music video.
Yeah. Yes. Like, do oh my we gosh. Do well, and for the song, it was like, do we do, you know, 0.5? Like, are we going to start introducing like half BPM measures?
Yeah.
Which, it, from my knowledge, is not very common. That's like how specific we were getting. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I learned a lot. I learned so much.
So you did, that was very brave of you with the demos. And so then I do want to show you this. I have a little walk down memory lane.
Oh, all right. Busting out the laptop.
I would love to know how many cover comps you think we have for this record.
I would say 42.
Yeah, roughly.
Really?
Roughly. So I'm going to show you, and we will put this online for the listening audience. We have all these different versions of the...
Oh, my gosh.
Do you remember?
Yes. We're scrolling through looking at... Oh, I still wish
there's
we could use that photo.
There's so many good covers. I think maybe we do like a five-year edition with like alternate covers.
Yes, all the alternate covers.
I still love that.
Or even a book. We could put out a book of like what all the covers that we would have done.
Oh, yeah, because this is great art by Connor Dwyer. And the cover story is one of those ones where... So we're going to tell you two stories. I'm going to tell the cover story, and then Lauren's going to tell the story of the You Say music video.
Okay.
The cover story is one that we just were not happy with what we were getting. And Lauren was literally sick on the floor of the studio.
Wait,
you remember
one
of the days we were past every deadline at this point.
And, okay.
And that's not your fault. I'm just saying we were past every deadline. It might have had a lot to do with you guys, but we were past the deadline. And remember you were sick lying in the studio floor.
Yes.
And I feel like the jerk manager moment where like we really need to pick a cover.
I had thrown up all night long and I had a pallet on the floor.
I did bring you
tzatziki's.
I brought you soup.
Yeah, you did.
I was trying to like get her enough energy to give me an answer on the cover cops. And there she's like sick and dying and we're past the deadline, or it was the day it was due, but there we had six covers and every one of them we would have settled for. And it was like, it was a Thursday. And I remember, and you're just like, yeah, we'll go with that one. And I was like, she's not happy. Like, I knew in my gut, not you're not happy, because like that you're not easy to please. I just knew in the gut it wasn't right.
Yeah.
Because I knew that you were settling.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, I don't want you to settle. This is not the place for you to have to settle on the cover of your album. Like, that's not, there's other things we all have to settle for and make compromises. But I was like, we can't do this on the cover. So we called the next day. Called Connor Dwyer, who's genius. He had designed some merch for us the year before. And I called him and he's like full-time with Sam Hunt. And Sam Hunt was huge at the time, like blown up. Connor was very in demand. And I called him and this is how God like interweaves his hand in all
finesse,
of this stuff.
Yeah.
I called him and I'm like, Connor, what are you up to? He's like, not much. I'm like, hey, do you have a chance to maybe design some covers? And he's like, well, I've got like the next 3 days off. And I was like, great, that gets us to Monday. And I bet I can buy us 3 days with the label. It's going to be pressure, but we've got 3 days. We'll take 3 days. Can you give us some ideas? And he literally did, I think it was 46 comps.
Wow.
And you, on that Monday, ended up going and sitting with him at a coffee shop.
Yes, I remember.
And we came up with the cover, which I think is pretty iconic. And so that was one of those crazy things. But then leads me to like the You Say music video. So again, there's a lot of things that people don't know about that music video.
Let's talk about the first music video.
Let's say most of the audience probably doesn't know that there have been two You Say music videos.
Okay, this is what's humorous. How in the world did I forget that? Because when y'all asked me, hey, what are five things that people don't know about You Say? What I should have said is there's actually two music videos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah.
I had this beautiful, wonderful, perfect idea because artists always have brilliant ideas, right? Yeah. Until they have labels and managers come around and say, no, it's actually not a good idea. So here I am. And I was like, I want to do this like paint thing where it's like, I'm like slowly morphing out of paint because I want it to be like my identity. Like I'm stripping away old things. I'm stripping away and getting rid of things like, because the song represents like getting rid of lies, replacing them with the truth. Right. So I'm like, let's like put paint all over my body, but we'll kind of do it starting from the beginning, working backwards, you know, where like in the beginning of the video, I'm covered in paint, but by the end of the video, I'm like fully bare, like no makeup.
Yep.
Just one of those kind of things.
It's a great concept.
Great concept in theory. Awful concept in execution.
Yep.
It looked as if I was, like freezing in a pool
Nordic.
Of paint.
Yeah, Nordic.
Yeah, it was, not that there's anything wrong with Nordic. I love Nordic.
No, but it was not right.
It
didn't fit the album. Left. It just didn't fit Lookup Child.
Yeah. Can you imagine me like swimming in a pool of paint? But golly, was it fun.
I can, because I've seen it.
I loved it. Oh, the wardrobe.
We're and
I
kept show, can all Can we show the, some of those photos?
Yes,
okay,
I kept
we'll,
all
We'll put
the,
some of those photos up.
We'll put those photos up, because y'all have got to see, like, this is some serious BTS.
Yeah.
But I remember being so cold in that pool, and John Gray just coming over. Or was it Paul? John.
John and Paul was there, too.
They're yeah, right there. Came out, and we're like, hey.
Yeah.
Get out of there.
Yeah.
Like it's, this is not gonna.
Yeah.
Come on. And then we had, what was it? 6 days or something to shoot.
Well, that video was done well in time to make it. But again, same as the cover, we all watched it and we were just settling. So then we shot the You Say video on Monday, July 9th. And it was uploaded to all the services by that Thursday, July 12th, because July 13th was the release date.
Here I am being ambitious by saying, you know, 6 days. No, you had three.
No, three. Yeah. So we called John Gray in, who Lauren had wanted to collaborate with for a long time. And John came in and has been our video guy ever since.
Yeah.
Shot that full day shoot. Edit.
At the studio. We were like, what are we going to do? It's like, we're going to walk around the studio because that's where I've been for You Say. And it's the most personal and normal.
Yeah.
And I'm not swimming in pools of paint and trying to like execute these elaborate concepts.
Right.
I'm not a concept girl. Taylor Swift, you got it, baby.
Yep.
I wish.
So, yeah. So anyway, so just on timeline wise, since we're going along the timeline, You Say came out on July 13th. And then we put the tour on sale. We sold out the tour in 3 days. That was crazy. And then first show in the Lookup Child era was July 21st.
So we clearly did not realize how long this was going to go. Lee's bringing out the gems. I'm a storyteller. Hello. So we are going to break this up into two different segments and tune in next week to hear part two. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Dagobites. Make sure to subscribe, tell your friends, and send me your questions to podcast@laurendaigle.com. See you next time.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Daigle Bites ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.